It's nice to be back here. It's really weird to be speaking English with people I've never spoken English to before. But tonight, we're going to have a look at a part of Nehemiah together. I'll give you a recap first to what's happened in the story of Nehemiah up to the point where we're going to join the story tonight. Nehemiah was a man who had a big heart for Jerusalem. He heard that Jerusalem was in ruins. He heard that the people of God were not safe to worship in Jerusalem because all the walls of Jerusalem had fallen down. And at the time, Nehemiah was in a place called Susan. And Susan, it sounds like a really nice place, doesn't it? It sounds like a really kind of romantic holiday retreat. But you know where Susan was? Iran. So that kind of puts things into perspective. And anyway, after hearing in Susan that Jerusalem back home was in such a state, he wept and he prayed, and he drew up plans for months about how to rectify the situation. And he asked his boss at the time to be able to go back to Jerusalem. He asked his boss for a letter so he could travel safely, some kind of passport. He asked his boss for some wood to rebuild Jerusalem. And essentially, he asked his boss, who was a foreign king, to change his kind of foreign policy, because previously this king had refused the rights of people to go back and rebuild Jerusalem. So basically, Nehemiah was asking the impossible. He was asking all these things that would make it possible for Jerusalem to be rebuilt. So he was asking the impossible. Basically, he needed a miracle and he needed divine intervention. So it's lucky really that our God does do miracles. And if we look around Bangor, if we look around Caernarfon, where I now live, and if we look around our area, and see the need here in Bangor, the need in the area, it becomes evident that this area needs a miracle too. So it's really fortunate, really, that our God can do miracles, and we've got to keep believing that. So that's where we're at. Nehemiah heard about the ruin in Jerusalem, and he now had travelled back to Jerusalem to do something about it. Let's see how this works now. Which one do I... I thought this would be just forward and back, but there's like 10 buttons on this.
I think it's one on the side.
This one? Wow. I mean, of all those buttons, you wouldn't have thought that the one to go forward would be the little one on the side. Anyway, okay. So we're in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 9. So I went to the governors of Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letter. The king had also sent army officers and cavalry with me. When Sambalt the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. So, here we go. Nehemiah's travelled from Susan in Iran back to Jerusalem. And it's interesting to note that the king has given him people to look after him, that he's given him cavalry. And everything seems to be going hunky-dory. He's had everything he wants from the king to go back to Jerusalem. And everything seems to be going right. But, all of a sudden, these two oddballs turned up. In verse 10, Sambalt and Tobiah. And I've got a picture of the two of them up here. This isn't working. Here we go. A picture of Sambalt and Tobiah, these nasty guys who were trying to undermine Nehemiah. And it's important for us to realise that there are Sambalts and Tobiah, people who oppose the work of God, in every town, in every period throughout history. And throughout the Bible we see this, people rise to oppose the work and the people of God. And And this is very timely for us, really, because we live in an age where it's quite popular to be anti-religious and specifically to be anti-Christian. The famous theologian Elton John once said that religion turns people into hateful lemmings. So you're all hateful lemmings, okay? And the author Philip Pullman has made a career out of getting his anti-religious frustration out in novels. But perhaps the most famous figure is Richard Dawkins, the author of The God Delusion. And one of Dawkins' arguments is that all Christians are brainwashed. And the only thing we do daily is try and brainwash other people to think like us. And I remember reading a brilliant piece in The Telegraph once by George Pitcher, and this is what he said: "But I suppose it's easier to decide that all Christians are brainwashed, wall-eyed literalists, and that we are driven by the imperative to force our religion on the next generation," he said about Dawkins. "A charge I would take a little more serious if Professor Dawkins hadn't recently endorsed atheist summer camps for children." This is quite witty, I thought. But some people are anti-Christian because they prefer to be their own God, okay? They like their own ideas. They like their own ideas about morality, specifically sexuality and marriage and stuff like that. And when they hear people talk about religion, they instantly go defensive in an aggressive way, because they feel under threat, because they're quite happy having themselves as their own God. And of course, you've got the big kind of general thing that everyone who does religion, and including Christians, are somehow members of the Taliban. You know, that's kind of, oh, you're all just fundamentalists, you're all just terrorists. And I mean, the people who believe this obviously haven't met the lovely tea ladies at my church. Because, I mean, I don't really understand how you can go from old little Welsh ladies to Taliban, you know what I mean? Because that's two very different things. But that's one kind of thing that gets thrown towards Christians, is that we're kind of fundamentalists and that we're essentially terrorists. So anyway, and one thing to be aware of is that Sambalt and Tobias could be working on the inside. And the main tactic could be gossiping about fellow Christians, that kind of attack on the church. And so it's important for all of us to search our own hearts to see if there's a Sambalt and a Tobias in our heart. That's very important. But what we essentially see here, right at the start, with Sambalt and Tobias coming into the story, is that times can be hard for Christians. And even as Nehemiah was seemingly everything going right, he gets opposition to the work. So basically, when we're in the business of following God, we've got to be aware that people will try and trip us up. So we'll go on to verse 11. That's it, verse 11, brilliant. I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, boom, we'll stop there. This journey from Suzanne to Jerusalem would have taken several months for him. So after months of praying, months of planning, months of travelling, once he got to Jerusalem, you would have thought that Nehemiah would have just got stuck right into the job straight away. But no, after arriving, the first thing he does is rest for 3 days. And there's an important lesson there, I think. And I struggle with this personally, to be honest with you. I tend to kind of just go, 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 and only rest when I have to rest, you know, if I go ill or something. And there's a funny story about a friend of mine who, he was a lecturer Monday to Friday. Then he prepared sermons on a Saturday, and lecture and pregethu, what's that? Preached, that's it, he only preached on a Sunday. So, and in the end, his health broke, basically. And he went to see the doctor. And the doctor asked him to explain, you know, take me through your usual week. And so he said that he was working all week, basically. And the doctor turned around and told him, I don't believe in God, mate, but I know your God took a day off. And that's an important lesson, and we're seeing that with Nehemiah here. Even Nehemiah, the big hero here, took a few days off. It's important to take time out because it helps us focus on our work, and it helps us also focus on our relationship with God. But the problem is, in our kind of modern society today, it becomes increasingly harder to get times of rest, because we've got our laptops, we've got 24-hour news, we've got emails, we've got our BlackBerries binging and whatever, and we've got everything after us. So it's increasingly hard to have a time of rest, but it is important. Because if we read the Bible here, but also throughout the Bible, God not only tells us that we should rest, but he commands us to rest. And but some of you might be thinking, well, I'm too busy to take, you know, to take the Sabbath. I'm too busy to rest. So are you saying you know better than God? That's the question you need to ask yourself. But you know, I bought a new microwave recently, and it had a big sticker on it, and it said, "Use only as instructed as instructed by the manufacturer." I don't know why they put this sticker on it, because I'm not going to like start putting cats in it or anything like that. But it says, "Use only as instructed by manufacturer." And the same is true about us. Use only as instructed by manufacturer. And our manufacturer, God, has told us that we need to Sabbath. We need rest, and we need time to concentrate on our relationship with God. Therefore, after months of preparation behind him and months of hard work in front of him, Nehemiah knew that he was in it for the long haul. So before getting stuck in, he took 3 days of rest to prepare himself. And there's a lesson there for us. And we go on to verses 12 through 16. Yeah, I'm giving up on this thing. So after having his chill out, after having a moment, he goes out during the night to start inspecting the city. He goes out to assess what's in front of him. He goes out to draw a plan together how best to fix up Jerusalem. And it's important to note in verse 12 that he's going out during the night with only a handful of people, okay? He didn't go during the day. He didn't go, like, in front of everyone. He didn't have a big convoy. He didn't go, look at me, Nehemiah, I've come to save you all. He was very humble about it. He went out during the night. Nobody knew he was there. Nobody knew he was going around doing this inspection. And there's a lesson again there for us. This area of Wales, some of you know, some of you don't know, has seen loads of Christians move in here over the years with big plans how they're going to transform this area, how they're going to win this area back to Christ. And they're very eager to share this grand vision with everyone. But before they get time to learn Bore Da, they move back to Manchester. Basically, the problem with these people is that they've got optimism, which is very inspiring, but they come to do the work with a naive attitude because they don't know what's going on. They haven't assessed the situation. They haven't got foundations to work on. And Nehemiah knew that this would be a problem, so he spends time here before going to do the work proper to assess the situation, to go and see what's what and how things fit together. So basically, quiet planning here is important because when he eventually goes public, he'll have the biggest impact then. And basically, if Christians go into kind of public ministry without a proper plan, the fire will burn out very quickly. And Nehemiah knew this, so he prepares. And what Nehemiah does here, as he goes round inspecting during the night, is that he's collecting facts. Because he knows it's important to build the work based on facts. Nehemiah knew that going round doing the work based on just kind of half ideas, based on some prejudices, wouldn't be okay. And there's a hard lesson again for us here. How do we know Bangor? Do we know this area good at all? Is our knowledge about Bangor based on hard facts, or is our knowledge of Bangor just based on the little small group of people we turn around in? It's important for you and for us to know this area inside out if we're going to serve God in this city. It's important for you to know the demography of Bangor. How many children here? How many young people? How many old people? How many people work? How many people unemployed? What about the students? How many pubs? How many betting shops? Is this a problem? What about other churches? What's their vision? Is it a shared vision? It's important for you to know your city if you're going to serve God here, because that's what Nehemiah is doing here. He's getting to know the city so he can do God's work there. And there's loads of different people in Bangor. I used to live here. I was born here, actually, by the way, claim to fame. Because you've got like proper Bangorai people from my street and places like that. Then you've got kind of middle class Bangor up in Penrhos Garnedd and over in Ynys Môn. You know, these people basically, they tuck the shirts into their trousers. And then you've got the hip people. You've got kind of the people who came here initially with the university. They might work in television, or they work for the BBC or something hip like that. They got the shirts out of the trousers. Then you've got the students who don't wear trousers at all. But basically, it's important for you to investigate Bangor. It's important for you to get to know Bangor so you can assess the work you've got ahead of you, just as Nehemiah did here, getting to know his city so he can work in the city proper. If we go on to verses 17 and 18. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace." I also told them about the gracious hand of God on me and what the king had said to me. They replied, "Let us start rebuilding." So they began this good work. So after assessing the situation, seeing at first hand what needed to be done, he starts to bring more people into the project. And it's important to notice the inclusive words he uses here. It's "come," not "I'm going." It's "we're all going." It's "let us rebuild." It's not "I'm going to rebuild." It's "we're all going to rebuild." And after Nehemiah shares this vision with everyone, they all buy into it. And that's important for you as a church. It's not about Peter. It's not about just the leaders of the church. It's about all of you. And it's important that all of you buy into the vision so you can win Bangor over for Christ. And what happens here is they all reply then. They replied, "Let us start rebuilding." And everyone pitches in. Nehemiah and everyone began to see what God's will was for them at this period in the history. So that's the question for us tonight. What is God's will for you tonight? There might be some here at your point in your journey where you feel you might not know the same God as Nehemiah. If you're in that place tonight, well, You've got to open your heart to the Lord, and the Lord will forgive you for everything you've done, so you can accept the Lord into your heart tonight. That might be God's will for you tonight. There might be some of you tonight who have given your life to Christ in the past, but you feel distance between you and God tonight. Some things might have come in to your life, into your heart, that's come between you and God. If you're in that place tonight, then let the Lord take that off you tonight so you can praise him fully. But what about God's will for all of you as a church tonight? You've got to listen out for his will so you can know what the Lord wants you to do in Bangor as the Lord led Nehemiah and his mates to know what he was meant to do in Jerusalem. And verse 18 finishes, it's a nice ending to the story, isn't it? They all replied, "Let us start rebuilding." So they began this good work. And it would be nice if the story finished there. You know, it's like these films that come to a nice ending, but you know there's another half an hour. You know there's a twist in the story. And there's a twist in this story because look who's back. And again. It's these guys again. But verse 19 goes, "But when Sambalt the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite of Ishel, and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us. 'What is this you are doing?' they asked. 'Are you rebelling against the king?'" So we've got these two nasty characters back. But they've picked up a friend now. They've got another friend. They've got, this is Geshem the Arab. They've basically, Sambalt and Tobiah have found another troublemaker to join them. And this is how bad people are. They're like a gang. They've got hangers-on, and the latest hanger-on here is Geshem the Arab. If you want to go on another slide. People who are up to no good, that's what they do. They go around rallying support. They go around to gather support before going out to create havoc. And it's obvious that Sambalt and Tobiah here have been going around spreading gossip about Nehemiah, and through this, Geshem, bless him, was sucked in to the nasty circle. So you've got to watch out that you don't get sucked in to this. It's important that you don't get into the wrong crowd like Geshem unfortunately did. If you come across Sambalts, if you come across Tobias inside as well as outside the church, you've got to run a mile. Don't let yourself get under their influence. And what Sambalt and Tobiah were doing here is they were spreading false accusations about Nehemiah in an attempt to undermine his work in Jerusalem. And they succeeded, obviously, at least in tempting Geshem over. And what they did was they got the wrong end of the stick. They heard that this guy had reached Jerusalem and he had a few people on horses riding with him. So they thought, right, guy getting to Jerusalem on a horse, he's probably rebelling against the king. I mean, they've come to the wrong conclusion. And you can understand how they came to this conclusion. But the message here is that we must remember that everything we hear isn't true. Obviously, Geshem didn't have the kind of quality control filter on the information he received, and therefore Nehemiah's come here on horses. Yeah, he did. Well, I'm sure he's a baddie. Yeah, you're right. You can see kind of Dick Dastardly and Muttley kind of conversation going on about, yeah, you're right. And anyway, and one funny story about how everything you read on the internet and in the paper isn't true. I made it into the Western Mail the other week, and the Western Mail said, "Rhys Goyd, Vice Chair of Cymdeithas, campaigned to establish S4C in the 1970s. Well, I either look remarkably good for a 50-year-old, or the paper got it wrong, and the paper got it wrong. So don't believe everything you read in the paper. So what happened here is that the three oddballs, Sambal, Tobiah, and Geshem, they heard half a story about Nehemiah, and they thought that he was going to start a revolt. And that wasn't true. And what all of us must understand tonight is that every Christian will face some kind of opposition. Some Christian leaders face public opposition. They get accused of brainwashing people. But all Christians, to some extent, you'll at least get stick off some of your friends. And that might kind of bear you down after a bit. And the important thing is how we respond to these mockers, how we respond to the critics. And that's what we see in verse 20, is how Nehemiah responds to these people who oppose him. The first, I'll read it. I answered them by saying, "The God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, start rebuilding. But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem, or any claim or historic right to it." And the first thing to note here is like we ourselves can't answer the critics. If we try to rebuke those who oppose us by just kind of lying on our merits, we will fail because we are sinners and our critics will find some kind of weakness in us. So the important thing to do is not to base any reply on our goodness and on ourselves, but rather to turn the attention instantly away from ourselves towards God. And Nehemiah's response here is very humble. He doesn't insist that he is right, but he just humbly explains that he's simply doing God's will. And it's important to note that Nehemiah here is also honest about his intentions, even with his opponents. And it's important for Christians not to kind of work under false pretenses, if you know what I mean. Christians, churches, have to be open about our faith. We have to be honest about our motives and our objectives. And I'm sure, like, a lot of you know that people actually respect that more if Christians are honest about what we're about. And if we're not honest about our motives, the only thing we'll be doing is tricking people. And in the end, that's just going to get thrown back to us. Because at the end of the day, you're not going to trick anyone into heaven, aren't you? So it's important that we're honest about our motives. So as we come to a close now then, although Nehemiah here is very humble, because he moves the attention instantly from himself towards God, but he does make sure that he, rather than his opponents, get the last word. So he's not a walkover, basically. He says, "You have no share in Jerusalem." So Sambalt, Tobiah, and Geshem, the crazy wackos, didn't have Jerusalem's best interest at heart. Nehemiah did. He was called by God to Jerusalem to serve the people of God in Jerusalem, to rebuild the city. God led him there to work. Basically, Nehemiah earned the right to be there because he labored for the people there. And it's important for you as a church to earn the right to tell Bangor about Jesus. I'm very encouraged about the street pastors business. I mean, doing that kind of work earns the right for Christians to eventually talk about Jesus in their city. And so finally, what have we learned tonight? Remember to take a day off once a week, chill out. You know, it's okay. God says it's okay. And during these times where you take a step away from the world and all its hustles and blackberries and whatever, listen out to what God wants to tell you. Remember in these quiet times that God has accepted you despite what you are. He's accepted you not because of any goodness in us, but he's accepted us through Jesus Christ. So take a moment every week just to think especially and deeply about that. And finally, you as a church should do what Nehemiah does here. Take time to pray, take time to plan, and get to know Bangor so you can serve God in Bangor just as Nehemiah and his friends were serving God in Jerusalem. So thank you very much for listening, and thanks for the welcome.